Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan. I've been playing some Dungeons and Dragons because I'm really cool like that. Let's get it started. All
pelicans,
all the time.
Welcome to the show. Last night's game was pretty amazing. We got another one coming up tomorrow night. We got a bunch of other things to talk about here. The draft, possible trades, what we think the board looks like that the Dell Demps has. But first, we're going to bring on Jerry V to get his take on these finals and what that really means for the Hornets and our Pelicans. Michael, you want to correct me, Pelicans?
No, I just I'm glad our listeners just took another shot.
So let's go get Jerry V. And now we're joined by the always excellent Jerry V. Jerry, thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure, gentlemen. Always a pleasure.
So, as everybody's been reading the site, has seen you've been following the finals. That game last night was pretty amazing. So I have one overall question, because there's always got to be the narrative from the finals.
Sure.
If LeBron James loses this finals, is he now a loser again?
No, I wouldn't take him a loser, although that'll fuel the debate, because everybody will equate being a winner to winning a title, and they'll forget about how a person wins or why they didn't win. They put all the blame on him. You know, he can have 45 points in game 7 and lose it by 1 because a teammate might miss a couple of free throws or commit a turnover to cost him the game, and he'll get blamed for it. Sometimes we equate just the conclusion of a season of winning the ring as to whether or not a player is good. He's great, and I wouldn't tag him a loser if they lost that game. Now, if he went 1 for 20, scored 3 points, and played miserably, that I would question his ability to really perform under that huge amount of pressure. But great player, but get ready for the debate and for the onslaught if he indeed was to lose that game.
Yeah, and but the good news is even if he goes 6 of 24 and wins, he'll get the MVP.
Yeah, and
like
yeah.
Kobe did.
Yeah, exactly. And then they'll also said, they'll be told that he had a poor game and that he's not as good as Michael or he's not as good as so-and-so. By the way,
right.
Footnote, Michael Jordan never had to play in a game 7. He never had to.
John, thanks to John Paxson. So Jerry, there's just been excellent basketball in this series. I mean, it feels like we're almost watching a different sport, especially those of us who watched 82 Pelicans, well, I guess Hornets games this past year. Give me one or two things. These are clearly the two best teams in basketball. One or two things that every GM, every coach, maybe even specifically the Pelicans organization should be taking away as far as how these two teams play such excellent basketball?
Number one, guard play. Number two, the necessity of having long and quick players on your roster. I think that's imperative that they look at that. I've always been a big believer in the length and quickness theory. I always believe that. If you just look at the overall quickness and offensive athletic ability of these two basketball teams, you'll get a nice sampling of what is needed. And I always tell guys, in fact, we had an extended conversation just a couple of days ago at a basketball site roundtable when they asked me almost the exact question about the roster and what would you do with it. I said, well, look at these two teams, and that'll tell you, one, how far away you are from getting to the finals. Look at these two teams and look at what they can do defensively and offensively and what the Pelicans cannot do as of yet, and that'll be the second sampling of how far away you are.
Yeah, and you and I got into maybe a little debate on Twitter. I don't know how Rocco from the Bronx would feel about it, but you and I were talking a little on there, and you said that, you know, Anthony Davis is a forward. But I look at this series, and the latest Spurs adjustment is they just don't have Tim Duncan and Tiago Splitter on the floor at the same time. You know, last night, almost not at all, except for, ironically, the last play of the game. The Heat go with Bosch at center. We've seen Haslam's minutes get cut. Birdman's minutes were taken away up until last night, but even when he was on the floor, it was with four smalls.
Right.
I guess I'm trying to, if I'm looking at these two as the rosters I want to emulate, I'm trying to figure out why the long-term plan isn't Anthony Davis at center or the main big, whatever you want to call that.
Well, and the way the game is now, and it was a fun debate, it always is, that you don't want to equate what your roster to their roster, man for man, pound for pound. You want to look at skill set. You look at what they have, and can you defend it, can you guard it, or can you do something that's better than they have? And I just think that Davis has the skills where he can be a face-the-basket type of player with his size, then run him as a cutter, where then you can run him in the post. He's not going to be your power-type center player. He's long. I like his mobility. I like where I think he will be as a player over the next couple of years that will allow him to face, that will allow him to go baseline jumper, elbow jumper, and put it on the floor, incorporate in pick and roll. So his skills to me are more of a forward type. Now, if we want to call it the modern day forward, so be it. If we want to specialize in, say, modern day center that doesn't require size, bulk, what have you, possibly, but I like to categorize him as a forward type because of where his skills will take him. And then I want him as a player that's going to cause a matchup problem for the opposition because of what his skills are. So that's what I meant by those comments on an Anthony Davis. If I want a back to the basket type, well, you could look for one, but I look at Duncan. He trashed Bosch when Bosch was matched against them. You look at a Duncan that can play facing and that can play with his back to the basket, and that's where Davis will be. So I equate him as a forward. Some people call Duncan a center for the sake of all-star votes or what have you. He's a forward. You know, that's where the game goes with skills to skill. If we look at that Pelican roster, it is not a debate from anybody, of what's required on that Pelican roster if we look at it that way. There is absolutely no room for analytical debate about what they lack quickness-wise and scoring-wise.
So we've talked about Grievous Vasquez many, many, many times.
Right.
And we've even like imagined on the podcast, you know, well, maybe Vasquez could work as a small forward in certain situations, as a shooting guard off the ball. I'm watching that game last night. There is no way you could have had Vasquez on the floor for more than 5 minutes in that game.
Yeah,
like maybe you could
example.
Match him up against
No, that's a great
Mike
observation.
Miller.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about it. So, I mean, is there any, I've said this a bunch of different times. I fully expect that this, the Hornets or the Pelicans roster in probably a year and a half will probably only have 2 to 3 players on it that were there last season. Do you think that's
possibly?
I mean, I can't really picture anybody else on this team who could fit into those basketball games that we saw last night and through this series at all. Who could defend anybody?
Yeah, that's a good observation, and it goes back to the very first conversation I think we ever had, or read any of the works posted that, and I've always believed that you compare yourself to the best 7 teams you play. Remember that one? And
yep.
Then you took it and you look at these 2 teams, which is a good thing to do, because you look at where these 2 teams have come from going to the finals. Now you take some of your personnel and you put it on the floor and say, okay, if I'm looking at San Antonio, Miami, and remember my other one, you build your roster to win a 7-game series. And the example of it is these 2 teams, because of what they can do offensively, rebounding-wise, how they can create things on the floor. They do a lot of specific basketball skill stuff that the Pelican roster cannot match yet. So you're right. You put Vasquez on the floor there, nice player. Who can he guard consistently enough where he can't be taken advantage of in a 7-game series? Is there a guy that the opposing team would be at a -4 in a 7-game series if you match him up with someone? Then take an Aminu, put him on the floor, then go on down the line and look and see who can he defend. Can he run with the team? Is he quick enough? Can he handle pick and rolls? Can he handle the defense? Can he get up and down? Can he get his shot off against these people? Can he do it repeatedly over a 7-game series? Do we have enough random personnel that can get shots on their own? Because if you can't do that, you can forget about surviving multiple rounds in the playoffs. Does the roster have that? And these are imperative questions that you ask, and you have to address them as you build to that. If you don't have them, do not even think about being a multiple round playoff team. And you know, blunt is beautiful. And when you're addressing roster and you're talking about personnel, it's best to discuss it in very blunt terms because it's the NBA.
So, you know, to get better, obviously that process is going to be huge this summer with the draft, with the Pelicans finally having some financial flexibility, free agency, maybe some trades. We just had 3 and only 3 players come in and work out recently. When a team brings somebody to work out, I mean, Dell has said that he's been scouting these guys since they were, you know, in high school, and they've obviously seen plenty of tape. What are they really looking at? Are they looking at the physical and limitations, or is it more of a mental thing where they want to, you know, see how these guys deal with adversity or tough questions and interviews? What do you think that the Pelicans were really looking at when they brought those 3 prospects in?
I think, one, they're looking at what a player can do. What are the things that he does very well? If what the player does very, very well, how does he fit into our play? Let's take a guard, for example. We lack, let's say they go, okay, we lack quickness and playmaking ability, escapability off the dribble, open floor speed in a guard. So they bring one in. They watch him play in college. They try to measure and how many situations were they able to evaluate in a college game that allows them to make a decent enough evaluation, because there's some scouting that you do that's a throwaway, because you might go up and see your guy play against a slower tempo team. You might see him against a zone. So they create an environment that allows him to showcase his speed, his quickness, athleticism, and on top of all that, his toughness. Is he a tough kid? If he's not, stay away. Don't even consider the player. So they look for that right on top of the list. And through personality, the people they talk to, is the tough kid coachable? And if he's coachable, that just elevates his stock. If you have 2 players that are very similar in skill, in size, in physical dimensions, what separates one from the other? Is one more coachable? Is one a little tougher than the other? All that plays out. So they're looking for skills that can address the roster and plus the personality of a player. What kind of personality does he have? Do you like the personality enough? Is he going to be a distraction, a locker room pain in the neck? Or is this the guy that fits into the character you want on your team? You got to be a very brave organization when you're willing to develop your roster with the type of guys you want as far as character, because some teams get desperate and they'll start to take a risk with a few guys because they have great talent, but they got a lot of baggage that they bring with them. And you don't risk baggage guys unless one of them can get you that much closer to the finals. So that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that toughness, coachability, and a specific set of skills that makes them better as a basketball team, either A, as a team, or B, at a particular position. And I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. We're talking about...
I hate to interrupt you, but let me use an example. When I would go out and recruit high school guys to play college ball at the Division I level, when I'd watch a guy play, it's obvious you can pick out quickly one's basketball skills over a certain time. I mean, you tell quickly. The guys that have been around, you know, he can handle? Yeah. Can he shoot it? Yeah. Can he run? Is he a good, tough kid? You see all of that. You can pick that out. Does he fit into your style of play? I mean, it's not that difficult to do. But what's difficult to do is the guy's what is his work capacity when the game isn't going on in the practice, and how coachable is he? So that's where you got to have other observation points. And they've done a lot of that. They want guys that can play, and they need guys that can help them right away.
So, I mean, if it comes down to it, I mean, we talk kind of in broad terms. Let's bring it to the guy that is on everybody's lips, it seems like, Trey Burke. He definitely appears to have that coachability and that attitude, personality that the Pelicans seem to love. But if there is one knock on him, it's that he's not that, you know, super athlete and quick that we've been talking about and that we have seen in this series. If the Pelicans have the opportunity to get one but not the other, what do you think wins out? Do they take a player like Trey Burke, even if this athleticism and speed is a huge priority of theirs?
The biggest thing they need on top of everything is scoring. They need scoring. Let's look at the playoffs first as an example. What do you notice in the playoffs about scoring? Do you notice the defensive preparation, how people are changing things? What do you see? Do you notice how dreadfully apparent it is to have guys that can put it on the floor, score the ball? Do you notice that in the playoffs? You notice the number of random plays and chaotic moments that emerge in a playoff game? You two guys follow the game. I'm sure both of you agree with that comment, right?
Yes.
The random play, the chaotic, it's on the floor, it's a scramble time. Who's quick, who can handle, who can get to the rim and shoot it? They need that. If you bring in a guy, let's say, and let's use Burke as an example just because we're discussing him. If he's not the guy that improves you at that position, that allows him to separate himself totally, unequivocally, without a debate, at a guy that plays the same position, he's not your guy. Unless he is that point guard or two guard that you think upgrades you. If he doesn't, can you do better in a trade or in free agency? Now, a lot of that has to do with how patient you want to be. But it's been a while since the playoffs have been played in that building. So they got to be totally sold on Burke as a guard. They got to be totally sold on him if they're going to bring him in, because they have other needs that are big. They need length. They need defenders. They need quickness. They need creative scorers desperately. So that's going to be the big dilemma at that position and for that particular type player.
So speaking of Burke, they brought in Burke, Len, MCW from Syracuse. Those aren't the guys. Those are the guys who are like predicted to go, you know, somewhere between 6 and 9.
Right.
Maybe a little. They might fall a little later. And Dell said, you can only bring in the guys who will come in. So
right.
the Pelicans are 5th. I'm 6th. Are a lot of these guys who are like the top 4 or 5 recruits just absolutely refusing to come to the Pelicans because they don't want to even admit the possibility they could fall?
Well, the agents,
is it their agents doing that?
Agents will hold them out. The agents will say, my client already has a high evaluation. He's considered a high stock guy. I don't want to risk him and allow the possibility of a negative evaluation to come out. I don't want to risk an injury to my client. I don't want to risk any of those things. So you know what my client can do. Sometimes they hold them out because they're saying maybe a flaw in their game can get exposed. So there's a variety of reasons why they're held out. It doesn't necessarily mean you wouldn't draft a player. And then you got to really measure carefully, what is the guy thinking? Is this agent pushing this guy and going, excuse me, you want to go to a legitimate playoff team, or you don't want to go to this building team, or let's wait and see who they can get to bring in before we send you there, because if we send you there to go with Anthony Davis and they can get another player, well, now you're in a better situation. So all of those things come into play, and it can get rather complicated. So and also, you don't want to be held holding the bag and not have guys come in. So, you know, you have to bring guys in, period, whether or not you're going to take them or not. But agents will play all kinds of games with that.
So famously, the last time, when it was the Hornets at the time, they drafted someone who they had not worked out at all because he fell in the draft. That was Julian Wright.
Right.
And he was pretty much a disaster. So even if they had brought him in, would they have been able to detect the indications that Julian just didn't really want to work or learn to play basketball if they had been able to bring him in? And do these interviews really reveal any real traits, or is it just kind of like check the box?
That's a good question, because a lot of guys now can be prepped in interviews. We see it now with NFL guys, NBA guys, politicians, what have you. They come in and they prep guys for interviews, the right things to say, even teaching guys the proper body language. You can learn about players when they come in to a degree. You really learn about a player when you're working with them over an extended period of time, just as you learn about people. If you can work with them over 5, 10, 15 practice sessions on a summer league team where you see them in game situations, the good night, the bad night, the body language, demeanor in the huddle, the after game, after practice behavior, is he a gym rat, all of those things. You get a lot of that background in talking to other people that have coached the player, et cetera, but you never want to deny what your own eyes can see. You know, you're always going to hear a lot of good things about a player, but it's important that what you hear matches what you see. You know, if somebody says, oh, he's got great numbers, okay, do the numbers transfer over to how he plays on the floor? Hey, he gets 20 a game. Okay. How's he getting those 20? You know, how is he getting them? Is he getting them all on dunks? Julian Wright. Well, they found that he couldn't shoot. He couldn't do other things. So those numbers were bogus. Beautiful kid, just didn't have the mental toughness to get better, but a terrific young man. So it's that whole process. And then sprinkle on that, if you're not a decisive decision maker on how you evaluate players, that holds you back even more. So that's why if you're an organization, which the Pelicans are right now, they have a blueprint of where they want to take the roster and the type of guys they want to bring in. Now, that will attract them to a particular player, and it'll also turn them off to particular players. So all that gets figured out in the entire mix.
So, I mean, the draft is probably everybody's favorite time of year because you're essentially buying lottery tickets. The potential is limitless because you're not talking about, you know, real players who we've seen in the NBA. Everybody could
right.
be this, could be that. But in reality, if the Pelicans want to win more this year, it's going to be what they do in free agency or with trades and getting some kind of veteran. You know, last year they went and got two guys in their mid-20s that aren't exactly leaders. They were young veterans. They, you know, they fit. Do you think that this offseason we might see the Pelicans target maybe a more decorated 28 to 32-year-old, somebody in that range that could come into the locker room and say, hey, young guys, this is what it takes to win. You know, teach them how they to do that. I mean, the way that David Robinson taught Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan came into a situation where there was Avery Johnson, Sean Elliott, David Robinson. You know, is there a chance that the Pelicans target something like that in order to teach these young guys how to become leaders and how to win long term?
Yeah, because one of the things you have to design, it's a very good question. One of the things you have to do as an organization, if your organization is geared and your ultimate goal is to win big, is you have to develop a healthy peer pressure in the locker room. You develop a healthy peer pressure in the locker room with good guys that'll push each other to win. But also you want to have a mix on the roster of guys that have traveled different journeys than you to tell you how they won or how they did things. So I hope they do that. I do hope that they bring in some experienced players to change the topics of conversation that you can have with each other. You follow my point? Guys that are capable of discussing things that the other guys on the team can't because the other guys haven't been there. And it's important to young players to hear that, to be around the guy with the work capacity and the stories to tell of this is what he learned, this is what he did, this is what it's going to take. Young players need to hear those stories. And by hearing those stories, you learn more about the young player because then you find out if that young player aspires to latch on to all of that. And then you learn even more about the young guy based on the communications he's having with the older guy. I mean, it's a fascinating process. So I hope they do. If you keep going young, then you got to coach and develop. Before you know it, 4 years are gone. You're not in the playoffs. Then what happens? 5 years go by. Coaches get fired. Front offices change. Now you got to start all over again. So you want an understanding with ownership and front office. What's our philosophy? Can we build this? And then that's when you can start filling in those fundamentals. But your question is one of those that has to be asked and then it has to be addressed because you're not going to win or get close to being a multiple round playoff team with just all young players unless you have extraordinary young players.
So the Hornets have three clear gaps on their team. They need another skilled, competent big man. They need two playmakers of some sort on the wing or at the guard, depending on how you want to play it. If they get two of those, so they get one decent veteran big man and they spend a big chunk of change on a solid wing player, and we're not even going to talk about names here, just one solid wing player who can create, handle, shoot, do several different things for you. Is that enough to get them into the playoffs?
Start. You can start talking seventh or eighth seed. You look at the needs that you have to address. You have to address rebounding. You have to address scoring. You have to address the three-ball talent. You have to address getting to the free-throw line. I'm mentioning all areas where the team was ranked very, very low. Free throw attempts, the ability to run an efficient offense. Jump shooting is very, very low. The scoring lacks certain skills. Get a wing player that can score. Get two scorers on this team. Get two guys that can play the game. A point and a two or wing, just swing players. Get a couple of those. And that can hold serve in case you had to stay with the current guards that you have that are going to run your offense. Because anything that you can add in another position is going to take a lot of pressure off the other guys. You can't ignore scoring. I mean, and they're last in the league in possessions per game. They're not getting enough shots. They're not taking enough shots because they're not playing with enough possessions because they lack that quickness and that basketball skill that's needed. So get a couple of guys that can play. They can change the complexion of your team in some way. And then that would be your first big step.
So So my last question is one that I still believe, I don't think it'll be the first thing that happens, but I still believe the biggest domino in this entire building of this roster is Eric Gordon. I don't know, and I guess I'd like to get your opinion on it. How hard must it be to build a roster when arguably, I mean, you say we need scorers. We have this guy who could be a 22-point-per-game scorer, but he's always injured. How hard is it to build your roster when such a major piece has such durability issues?
It's tough. It's tough to do. Because, one, the financial investment in him, then the health factor. And if he's not going to be reliable, if he's not a durable enough player, well, then the consequences are if he can't play, another part of your roster is going to be exposed if it's lacking to fill that spot. And that hurts. So they got to come to a decision on, A, the durability of him, B, the financial investment, and C, where his heart is to play. You got to get stone cold up front with him, and I'm sure they'll do this, and or they haven't already, of where his head is at to play ball. So you got a player that you think isn't durable, okay, then plan on not having him for so many games per year. So now you got to plan to address that. So now you got to get in a guy that can fill that need. If you have a guy on the roster, if Gordon goes down, we always used to play this game, okay, I'd stop you in the hallway and say, hey, Gordon is out for 10 games. Who are we playing? You're always playing these mental games and how you fill it in. And that's a nuisance to deal with that. That's why there's more pressure on you to have to fill that scoring need. My thoughts are you fill that need and not even be thinking about Eric Gordon right now. Assume all the negative for now. So when you can fill that need, if anything hits the fan, you're prepared to handle it. If it doesn't, now you have the two guys on the roster that you need to get you some scoring. But you can't put all of it there and say, we got Eric Gordon, so we don't need to do this. My thinking is I still recruit that position of a guy that can score and play the game because you're always going to need more than one.
So we have one player. Some people hope he could turn into this. I'm pessimistic. Most of the national media has murdered him.
Well, Austin Rivers.
When they talk about Austin Rivers.
Yeah.
So just based on what you've seen of him, and, you know, statistically he had one of the worst seasons ever last year. But based on what you've seen of him, how soon do you think it'll be until he is a solid rotation player, or do you think he'll never reach that point?
I want to see what he does after this summer. He's got to heal and he comes back. I want to see where he comes to, where he arrives, where he comes from to where he gets to. He's not there yet. He's not there yet. He's a guy you're going to have to wait on a little bit. Patience, mm-hmm. Give him minutes to play. So what you have to do is, you know, how long you want to wait when you've been a non-playoff team. So you can address that position knowing that he's there. And then if he comes along and develops to the guy that you want him to be, you'll have the option later with another player to A, is the other player, can he play a couple of positions? Does he just help your depth? Can you trade the other player, what have you? But it goes back to the philosophy question. How long are you willing to wait? And do the players you currently have, will they get you to the next step that you want to take? Are you still going to be in the waiting process and not be able to take that step? And he's not there yet as a guy that will allow that particular position to take that step. And that goes back to one of the great questions you guys asked. The youth of the roster is preventing you for the time being to do certain things. Who can he talk to on that roster? Because it can't always be the head coach that can help him become a player. So when you bring in an experienced type player, now we go back to what we discussed. He has a guy he can have those conversations with that can help him as a pro.
Yeah. So let's take that and do similar to what we said with Gordon just now.
Right.
I keep seeing these articles from ESPN's, you know, draft experts that are saying stuff like, well, you know, the Pelicans aren't really considering certain players because they still believe Austin Rivers could become the backup point guard. If you were building this team,
He's not a point guard yet.
Okay.
No. So I mean, you're building. That's my thinking. I don't think he's a point guard yet. But go ahead.
Well, the question is, like you said with Gordon, you don't even consider him. You think of it, you're like, I'm going to try to fill that role whether Gordon's here or not.
Right.
So if you're looking at these draft prospects, does Austin Rivers enter the picture? Do you say to yourself, I can't take that guy because I already got Austin Rivers here?
No, because you got to go back to if you can get a guy that can make you better at that particular position, you go back to thinking, okay, can like we were just saying, the player that I currently have, does he allow me to take the next step? If he doesn't, and that's a step I have to take, then I got to get a guy that's going to accelerate that process, and then I can develop my Austin Rivers, and now I'm building healthy depth on my team. You follow me on that?
Yeah, so I mean, that's exactly
it. Yeah, it goes
back to
the
organization. That's how I'm thinking, too.
Yeah, organizational philosophy. You and I, you know, all three of us are sitting down, and we're going, okay, guys, which guys on our team are allowing us to take the next step in our blueprint? And then we think about it. And then we say, now we can get so-and-so, player A. He'll make us better at that particular position and allow us to make that step at that spot. We take him. And then as we develop that other player, now we have depth at that position. And then, of course, I mean, it sounds simplistic, but look at some of the – you need key backup and specialty players on your roster if you plan on being a multiple-round playoff team. Notice I'm shying away from saying a championship team because that's an excruciating journey. So you got to start with get in the playoffs and then be a two-round playoff team. And currently your personnel doesn't allow you to do that.
So – the listeners are absolutely going to kill us if we let you go without putting you on the spot.
Sure.
Eight days from now, we're going to be watching the draft. David Stern's going to come up and say with the sixth pick, the newly renamed New Orleans Pelicans select, what are going to be the next two or maybe three words out of his mouth?
I wouldn't be surprised if they select and say the Hornets trade the pick to get an established player. Or package the pick to get an established player. I haven't spent as much time on certain players to say that's who they'll take. I mean, I've watched tape on Indiana. I've watched Burke. I've watched several guys. I watched some Maryland stuff just the other day. I'm watching some Syracuse stuff. And there are guys out there, but there isn't a guy that totally blows me away. You know, Burke doesn't have the left-to-right game. He doesn't have the Chris Paul game that people say that he has that's so far-fetched. So I'm saying that with that sixth pick, they will package the pick, look to make a trade with the pick to bring in a piece or two that allows them to take the next step. That's my thinking on the issue.
You made Ryan so happy.
You made my day.
And I'll tell you why I say that, guys, is that there are some nice players in the draft, but where you are as an organization, it isn't an insult to the players that you're not taking them. It's where you are as a team. And you've gone back-to-back years with the inability to score. You haven't improved your number of possessions per game. And you haven't improved enough in your getting to the line and the other things that are requirement to compete at this level. So are you going to wait another year to do? You have to get better to a degree this off season for a lot of reasons, ticket sales, marketing, new year, new identity, branching it out. You want to get out there. And then the fact of how long your coach has been here and your front office personnel, you eventually have to give. And I think they have the right people in place in those areas, but you got to give the fan base and your team a taste of that next step. Doesn't have to be gigantic. But you got to show something. That's why I think it's a very important offseason.
All right. I'm hoping that they trade the pick and that we get to see some nice veterans land on this team and propel a sword.
I think they're exploring that situation now to see the possibilities. Nothing might happen till after the draft or after the summer. You know, you can always draft somebody for somebody else and then go on that route. But yep. I think all of us agree that what the needs are, and I think all of us agree to a certain degree that you need some experience to come in that can play for you and give you a little more credibility and enhance your basketball skills.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, thanks for coming on the show.
Guys, it's always a pleasure talking hoops with you, and enjoy Thursday night's game. I know why, Will, because I got Friday off.
Nice.
All right,
thanks
guys.
Very much.
Always fun. Thank you very much.
So, Michael, which team are you actually rooting for in this finals? Are you following the Spurs like I am and hoping they win?
I am, but it's weird. I think that if the Heat lose, LeBron is more likely to move and go to maybe even better super team or situation in 2014. So even though I want the Spurs to win, logic almost tells me that I would prefer that the Heat win, so they have this illusion that they could get not five, not six, not seven, because 2-3 years from now, I can't see that LeBron Wade Bosh core really being something that that I'm terrified of. So, I probably should be rooting for the Heat just so there's no possibility that LeBron comes out to LA or, you know, forms up some other kind of super team that would be more dangerous. But yeah, I'm rooting for the Spurs against probably what's best for the Spurs.
Yeah. So there's that whole narrative. I brought it up about, you know, LeBron and him not being able to finish these games out and blah, blah, blah. So as I said, blah, blah, blah. This kind of stuff annoys me. If he loses this series, does it impact your way of thinking about him really at all? Should we suddenly say, like, well, that's the definition of LeBron James?
No, but I think it takes out of play, no matter what else he does, it takes out of play the debate of is LeBron better than Jordan? Because there's no way you could lose three finals. I mean, he'd have to win 10 he'd have to be 10-3 to even be in the conversation of him versus Jordan if Jordan's 6-0. So do I think different of him? No, but I think losing this series takes him completely out of play from greatest player ever, and maybe even second or third, because I think that is the only issue. The only definite is that it takes him out of play of the greatest ever, no matter what he does, and it solidifies Duncan as top 10.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. Because I keep thinking back. I mean, I watched Celtics when I was a little boy. And, I mean, does anybody think less of Bird because he was never able to repeat his championships? He always lost the year after he won?
Stephen A. Smith does, but he's the only person I've ever heard. He said that the Celtics were in a dynasty because they never won back-to-back. Same for the Spurs. So that's the only one I've heard, but... Bird, I think if Jordan had to go through the Dr. J 76ers, the Magic Lakers, I don't think he would have gone 6-6 either. So a lot of it has to do with the era that, you know, you come up with. And I think that's why this title might mean a lot for LeBron. You know, they basically beat a very young OKC team last time. I think you can't take anything away from LeBron if they beat this Spurs team. But outside of LeBron, I asked Jerry V this question. I want to hear what you have to say, because to me there's been one really clear thing. Watching this series, what is the one thing that either of these teams do that you just pray to God the Pelicans pick up on and implement starting next season?
I mean, they need to be able to have some masters of the pick and roll nonstop. I mean, that's all Tony Parker is running out there over and over again. And that's what LeBron is running most of the time as well. I mean, that's my takeaway. We have no ball handlers that can come even. I mean, even Gordon at his best doesn't match either of the ball handlers on either of those teams.
Yeah, see, to me it starts earlier than that, because Indiana ran a lot of pick and roll, but the Spurs get into their offense with 20-21 seconds left on the shot clock. Indiana wouldn't get into their offense till sometimes 9-10 seconds left. The number one thing I take away, and go ahead and watch Game 7, maybe they slow it down a little bit because it's such a pressure-packed game, so maybe go back and watch the first six games. These teams are getting into their offensive sets with between 19 and 21 seconds left on the shot clock almost every time. So yeah. When they do that, they could try play A. Oh, that doesn't work. Back out. Now let's swing to B, or let's go to this alternative off of play A and spread the, I mean, the Pelicans don't get into their offense till there's 12, 13, 14 seconds left, sometimes less than that. And basically, you have one play that you could run. If that doesn't work, you're jacking up some kind of horrible shot. If there's one thing I could take away, it's the Pelicans need to get into their offense so much earlier. People talk about pace like, you know, pace is all about fast breaking and playing Denver Nuggets style basketball. That is not it at all. I want to see the pace increase the way the Spurs do. Of let's get into our offense with 19 to 21 seconds left, and or let's try to get a good shot before the other team gets a chance to set up their defense. I think those first 5-6 seconds in a shot clock is so important, and it wasn't to the Pelicans last year. We would just walk it up and, you know, get into our offense when we felt good and ready, and that's just, you can't do that if you want to be a real contender.
Well, yeah, and you also got to – I agree 100%. Part of that is our bigs don't outlet the ball either. I mean, part of it's that they're not – like, Lopez isn't even grabbing the defensive rebound, so it's kind of hard for me to criticize him for not outletting if he never has a rebound to outlet. But, I mean, half the time it's Vasquez coming back to get the ball or to rebound it. I can't sit here and say that Davis is particularly good at outletting the ball. I haven't seen it. Ryan Anderson isn't either. So it's got to be like it's more than just even getting a point guard who's willing to push. It's changing everybody's way of thinking is, yeah, grab the defensive rebound, but then don't just sit on it and let everybody clear out. You got to move it. You got to kick it out. And you could see, during last night's game, early on especially, Duncan would grab that rebound and immediately clear it to Manu or Tony Parker. Which would either result in a turnover or a missed shot. But, you know, at least they're trying.
Yeah. So
poor Manu.
I mean, if he comes up with a big game 7 and that's the last thing everybody remembers, then, you know, and that's what's funny to me is, like, I'm obviously a big Bill Simmons fan. I really enjoy Jalen Rose's personality. There's absolutely no point in watching the pregame show. Because anybody who says that they know what's going to happen in the next game is the biggest liar on this earth. I watched Magic Johnson say before Game 5 that the Heat figured out the Spurs in Game 4 and the series was over. Obviously, the Spurs come out and blow out the Heat the next game. I heard him again last night say that there's no way the Spurs could come back from that. Like, let's stop trying to predict the next game. It's been the most random series that I've ever seen, and it's, you know, that's part of the fun. So don't even try to predict the next game. Who cares? Just enjoy. Honestly, it's the most I've watched, I think, every NBA Finals game since 1988. That was my first one. The 1993 NBA Finals were my favorite up until now. I think they're pretty much tied. If Game 7 is a stinker, I'll stay with 93. But if it's great, this will be my favorite finals of all time. So just enjoy it, because the next basketball we'll be watching is Summer League basketball, and we'll be praising Denzel Bowles or somebody like that. Like, this is the last good basketball we'll see for a long time. But so getting to the draft, I talked to Jerry V about this. You know, all the interviews for all the guys are up on Bourbon Street Shots. Dell and Monty got interviewed, answered some questions. Your biggest takeaway, if anything, from that day we worked out those three guys, and, you know, including what Dell and Dems had to say. Any takeaways from you?
I mean, the number one takeaway is really Dell's not getting the guys he wants to come in and work out for him. I mean, I like the three guys he brought in because they're probably likely to be available at the time. You got to do your due diligence on those particular guys. But, I mean, I think everybody's expecting the Hornets to have a crack at a couple of those guys who are top or the bottom of the top tier. And those guys aren't coming in. And, I mean, that's got to be frustrating. Like, you wouldn't believe if you're Dell. I mean, and that's the reason why I'm not completely focused on who's coming to work out for the Pelicans, because they have that whole thing going against them. The agents are not going to want their, because the way this draft is, everybody in the top five thinks they could be number one. Every single one of them thinks that. And they don't want to, like, give anyone the idea, well, I might fall all the way to six, because you've got to be in the top five. So, I don't know. That was my number one takeaway. Other than, I'm not happy. I'm not happy about any of those prospects.
Yeah, I think you're underselling Lynn. I would make him the odds-on favorite to go number one as of today. I think he goes number one, and I don't think he pops.
I've heard that, but it's crazy. That's like,
I don't think there's any way he falls below four. I think that's his floor. I think one is his ceiling. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. The other thing, so I agree with what you're saying, but there are guys who are working out for teams below us that we didn't even bring in, and that might be even more interesting to me. Where's Shabazz Muhammad? Where's CJ McCollum? Dell could have gotten those guys. Where's Cody Zeller? I mean, are you taking it as, by not bringing them in, when obviously those are not the guys declining us, by not bringing those guys in, I mean, is it too much to read that, A, they're off our board, and B, there's almost no chance the Pelicans trade down or pick up another pick, you know, because, I mean, you would think that if either one of those were really of option, they would have worked out other guys like that.
Yeah, I mean, what it tells me is Zeller surprises me. I kind of expected him to be in. And, you know, it's still possible he could show up. They didn't say they were done with all workouts. Yeah, I mean, if you think of it that way, it kind of lends credence to the idea that something's going to happen draft night and the Hornets, or the Pelicans, wow, I'm going to do it. Everybody's going to be good and drunk at the end of the stupid. That, you know, they're not going to pick anybody, and we're going to see them move the pick for something. And there's lots of opportunities to do that. There are teams very clearly deciding right now that they are going to start blowing it up this summer. So Pelicans have some opportunities to maybe pick up a veteran or two from one of those teams.
And even as Jerry said, it doesn't have to be draft night or even agreed to on draft night. We saw this just a year ago. The Houston Rockets, they drafted a bunch of commodities and weren't attached and went into the summer and said, okay, we got flexibility. We've got players we could trade. We've got these commodities draft picks now that we could trade. Here we are. And, you know, you could be at six and look at it, not really like anybody, and then just say, okay, which one of these guys will likely have the most trade value this summer, and pick that guy with that in mind. So, yeah, I agree, but, you know, the first one I'll get to, it seems like ever since the idea was put out there that Dallas doesn't want their pick, it seems like this idea is, you know, running rampant, and a lot of Pelicans fans seem to be on board. Sean Marion and the 13th pick, essentially for your 2035 second rounder, you know, you're getting some money off the books from Dallas and they're giving you a pick for your troubles. It gives you a vet that we've been talking about that, you know, has a good deal of experience, playoff experience, et cetera. Is that something you would consider?
Only in one situation and one situation only. If I could have a guarantee from one of the top three teams that they are willing to trade me their pick for my 6 and 13. Because there is nothing at 13 that I want. Nothing at all. There's no way I want to come out of this draft with two rookies. So if I can move up to one of my, you know, top three guys that I really love, I would do that. And that's the only consideration I would make. And, you know, a trade like that's happened in the past. Darren Williams, Utah moved up and grabbed Darren Williams. And I think it was a six, it might have been 6 and 13. Or was it like 6 and 11? But, I mean, basically it was the same kind of spread. So you could possibly do that. I don't know if the Wizards are willing to, because they don't want rookies either at the moment, but maybe the Magic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting possibility. Something to consider, but I agree. I think fans, and I completely get it. Fans get enamored with the draft. You know, it's a bunch of lotto picks that maybe, you know, win you the Powerball. I get it. The possibilities are something we're always attracted to rather than the Luol Dengs. We know who Luol Deng is. It's not sexy. It's not fun. It's not exciting. But, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't know the last name.
I'm sure that's accurate.
Yeah. No, he is so exciting. Luol Deng isn't. A guy who's great in international ball, who's been the glue guy for one of the most overachieving teams, in the last, I mean, really in two different spurts over the last 10 years. Like, that guy's not fun and exciting and somebody you want to add to your roster. But this guy who's been dominating eighth graders and has all the potential in the world, that's the guy we want. I get it. I understand the excitement of potential and possibilities and lottery. It's why, you know, the gaming industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. But I can't imagine. I mean, you see how little interest Dell has in this entire draft prospect, how few guys he's bringing in. I mean, I'm here in Utah. They've brought in nearly 30 guys at this point. Right. And they have picks 14 and 21. So it's not something that, you know, I know a lot of people just want to pick up more picks, more youth, more young guys, more lotto tickets. Don't bank on that is all I would say. But so
I'm not being 100% fair here. I could see a situation where very similar to what San Antonio did when it went after Leonard. So I could very willingly get on the phone with the Mavericks and say, look, I have a guy I want. He's fallen to, you know, a point. If he falls to you, I will make that trade with you. But if he doesn't fall to you, if that guy doesn't reach you, there's not going to happen. And so there is that possibility. But me personally, there isn't a guy in this draft class who I see likely between 8 and on that I would give up anything for, which is kind of a real condemnation of this class. I mean, I could maybe see going after Karasev. So, anybody excite you in that range?
Well, 8, yeah, 8. There's a guy I see falling to 8 that's number 2 on my big board, so yeah. But if we're talking later than that, if we're talking 11, 12, 13, no. But let me throw a conspiracy at you, because this is a podcast. We like to have fun. We're not, you know. Let me throw a conspiracy theory at you. Dell's brought in so few guys. What if there's a guy that he absolutely loves, doesn't want to show his hand? I mean, we got to remember that Dell was at the NBA Draft Combine. He got the ability to talk to all these guys. He's talked to Ben McLemore. He's talked to these guys. He's seen them. He's been watching them since they're in high school. Like, I think we're automatically, I think a lot of people are, well, we didn't work them out. They're off the list. We're not drafting them. What if he absolutely loves somebody, doesn't want to tip his hand because he knows that somebody could trade up ahead of him to get him if they love him too. So he doesn't bring him in for a workout. I mean, is that a possibility? And I'll say this specific to CJ McCollum because it's so weird to me that, you know, according to you know, some other people of what Monty said in the past, Monty said Damian Lillard was number two on their entire board last year. I don't see a prospect in this draft that's any closer to Damian Lillard. I mean, CJ McCollum, they're not carbon copies, but they're pretty close. How could they absolutely love Damian Lillard last year and not even take a look at CJ McCollum this year? Not even bring him in, not even pay his per diem and pay for a flight. I mean, nothing. That is so weird to me that, of course, my conspiracy theory wheels start turning. Buy into any of that?
No. No. I just don't think, unless he shows up in like the next few days for a workout we don't know about, I don't think they have him on their radar at six. I mean, I understand where you're going with that idea, but I mean, what are you going to do? If you worried about the workouts that every other team are making, I mean, unless you're Kevin Pritchard, who used to panic over people working out players and rumors and spend millions of his owner's money to move up like one slot in the draft to get somebody. I mean, most GMs don't worry about that kind of crap. They really don't. Because you can't, I mean, you said Utah has had 30 guys. Most teams have had a dozen prospects. It is strange the Pelicans have only had three, but most teams have had about a dozen people in. Unless they're like in the top, you know, five, and then they've had like a few prospects in, and then usually it's like some really late guys. But I don't see it. Sorry.
All right. So
I know you love CJ. I love CJ myself.
I mean, I love him. That combined with the Lillard, you know, with the
should have put a ring on it.
Yeah. It's just really weird to me. But okay. So. So forget about yours and mine.
Uh-huh.
Let's just trying to read in between all of this information, misinformation, what we've heard in the past, how we know this team wants to build, what Jerry V said, you know, whatever. Throw your and I's big boards out the window. We're going to do that 2 days before the draft. What do you think the Pelicans' top six looks like?
So do you want me to give you what I think is going to I'll just give you my top six
board.
If
they keep the pick, yeah.
If they keep the pick. I honestly believe it's Ben McLemore, Otto Porter. This isn't an order because do you want me to try to make it an order?
Yeah, you got to give it to me in order.
All right, give it to you in order. I think it is Otto Porter, Ben McLemore, Alex Len, Nerlens Noel, and then probably Trey Burke.
Trey Burke, and then six would be like Oladipo.
Oladipo, yeah. Sorry, I thought I'd gotten to six. Yeah, Oladipo's after Burke.
So you think if at number six those are the two guys on the board, which is what I believe NBADraft.com and Hoops Hype's latest mock says is Burke and Oladipo are on the board at six. You think that Dell goes Burke?
I do.
All right. Yeah, I agree with that. My board, we have in top three.
I think that's crazy, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, we have the same top three in a different order. I really believe number one is Alex Len.
Okay.
I believe number two is McLemore. Number three is Otto Porter. Number four is Noel. So we have the same top four, just shifted a little bit. And then I'll agree. I think number five, it's so tough. I don't know. I think number five is between Michael Carter Williams and Burke. I agree with Jerry V. I think scoring is a bit of a priority. So I would say Burke is five, Carter Williams six. I actually think Zeller would be seven and Oladipo would be eight, which I agree is absolutely insane. But, okay.
Yeah, and you're probably right about Carter Williams, that he probably is higher than Oladipo, which it upsets me so much. my I'm very upset by my hypothetical Dell Demps draft board.
I think our entire pick, and maybe even if we keep it or not, because I think it is one of those scenarios where Dell goes, if we could get this guy, or this guy, he's our pick. We're not going to look to move him this summer unless, of course, we get blown away. I think those three guys for Dell are Len, McLemore, and Porter. I think if you hear one of their three names called, you don't have to worry about, you know, them possibly being shopped. I think it's one of the and I think one of those three guys is definitely available if and only if one thing happens, and that's Anthony Bennett goes in the top five. It all comes down to him. If he goes 3-4, maybe Phoenix takes him at 5, but I think his only real landing spots in the top 5 are 3 or 4. If he goes there, one of those top 3 prospects on Dell's board is there at 6. If he doesn't, I think they're all gone.
Yeah. I think that there's only one other opportunity, and that's I could see CJ going to the Suns.
Yeah, or they even talked about Steven Adams, which I know we could do a whole podcast and I'm
if Steven Adams goes to the Suns, I will bust a gut laughing.
You know what that would remind me of? Remember the year Sheldon Williams got a guarantee at 5 from the Hawks?
Yeah.
When like he would have been there at 20, guaranteed him 5. I mean, we've seen such crazy stuff. That's why I say I see posters getting all upset, and even in our 6 pick tournament, you know, they'll say, well, there's no chance these guys will be on the board, so why am I even voting?
Right.
If you think you know what's going to happen in 8 days, again, just like in Game 7, you're lying. You have no idea. We've seen the craziest things happen every year. I mean, there's a report now. I mean, Chad Ford is saying that, you know, Tony Snell, the Kings are considering him at 7. This is a guy that's in the 20s on most mocks. I mean, you have no idea who is going to be there and who won't. And here I am saying that right after I said it all comes down to Anthony Bennett. Yeah, you're right. Maybe some other things happen, but what I do know is if Anthony Bennett does go before us, there will be one of those top players there, just
so
numbers-wise.
Those are your top three. Those are the top three players on his board. Both of us agree. We may be wrong. I'll admit it. But if... does that make you happy?
You know, I've really looked into Alex Len more and more because, see, I think you would be especially crushed because I think if they do trade up, it's for Alex Len. Like, I could just see Ryan Schwan sitting there with his beverage of choice on draft night, hearing that the Pelicans are trading up to number 2 or number 4 with Otto Porter or, you know, whatever still on the board, and then selecting Len, I don't know if I'll be able to get you on the podcast after that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've gone in with an open mind. He is a gymnast. He was a gymnast up until age 12. If that helps sell anybody, that was one of...
Skeety Shvili was a frickin' ballerina. I mean, come on.
That was one of the first things that you know, I came across in some in-depth research. I keep ironically coming back to your Michael Carter Williams point. I think the idea of Alex Len is so fascinating because, in theory, you have a 7-1 big who could defend in the low post and wouldn't be a liability in the pick and roll. Like, how many guys can you say that about? Tyson Chandler's great in the pick and roll, but he could get abused in the post. Like, really, off the top of your head, can you name two 7-foot-1 guys who are both good at defending in the low post and not liabilities in the pick and roll? Go.
No, we can't.
Right. So the pot.
I mean, Tim Duncan's okay.
Not anymore, but in his prime, yeah. I mean, Pop has been taking him out in pick-and-roll situations, as evidenced by last night. It probably cost him the game. They didn't get those rebounds. But yeah, in his prime, Tim Duncan. So that's what I'm saying. The guys with that capability, who in theory can do those both of those things, not be a liability either place, and potentially even be good in both places, are so rare. You know, I think you could argue Marc Gasol because he doesn't have the footwork, but he's so smart with his angles. He doesn't let people get their body into him. Like, and Marc Gasol was just the defensive player of the year. So
right.
The idea of it, if he stays injury free, I'm not as excited on the offensive end. But if you're telling me I could put a 7-foot-1 guy, I don't even care about his offense, 7-foot-1 guy next to Anthony Davis that will not be a liability in the pick and roll and could defend the post and alter shots at the rim, I would sign up for that so quick because I have no clue how I could possibly get that somewhere else. So I would be okay with it. It would be a swing for the fences pick for me that if you hit a home run, you are talking about probable championship contender for, you know, a significant period of time. If the injury woes are real or he can't get up to the potential, it could be something that you could regret, especially if you trade up to get him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Alex Len worries me.
Yeah, I see it. And then the other thing is Jerry V's on here. He's telling us about, you know, you need a guy to create offense when the play breaks down, when things get hectic, kept pounding that message to you and I even after the podcast. Yeah. Ben McLemore is fantastic as a spot-up shooter and in transition. The thing that he's horrible at is creating his own shot or doing something when the play breaks down. So you and I have him in the top three, but really – if that's something that the Pelicans want to add this year, that's not what Ben McLemore does.
Yeah, and so, I mean, people forget how good Ray Allen actually used to be off the dribble. He is not Ray Allen. He's not Ray Allen in college. He's not going to be Ray Allen in the NBA, not without some serious work. But, yeah, I mean, that's part of why the more I focus on this draft and the more I look at these prospects, I've gone from having like 5 guys I'd be happy to get and 3 guys I could probably be talked into to having 2 guys I'd be happy to get and 3 guys I could be talked into. And the rest, I'm just like, I can't even get to the number 6 where we're drafting anymore. And that's really unusual for me. I love the draft. I get excited about the dumbest people in previous years by watching them and seeing what they could do. And I mean, I got excited over some really lame people last year. And this year, I can't do it. Like, the only guy I can, like, drum up any sort of, wow, that could be kind of neat, are, like, guys like Karasev and Mike Muscala. I mean... Yeah. These aren't guys that are going to, even if like my fondest dreams come true, they're role players. So, it's pretty bad for me.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to agree. So, I mean, I guess my thing with, I agree. I think save for a guy like Otto Porter being on the board, which I still think people call me crazy all the time. I think there's 70% chance now that Otto Porter's on the board. I think it's
at 6.
I think Washington is the only other possible landing spot.
Wow.
It's the only, he doesn't go anywhere else. It's Washington or us.
He fits with the Suns really well.
Oh no, you're talking about wanting to get more athletic and shot creators up. I don't see that at all. But anyway,
okay.
So Otto Porter's not on the board. So we're talking about trading this pick. But the only thing that worries me about that is if you take the pick slot out of the equation, we look to be about $15 million under the cap. If you trade this pick, although you do pick up a better player, you are somewhat limiting your flexibility this summer compared to just taking a young guy on a rookie scale contract. With that in mind, is there you know, a maximum salary that you would go up to, you know, with regard to looking at guys to move this pick for, or does that not even come into the equation because you're not, you know, you're not banking on being big players in free agency?
Well, I mean, there's always some flexibility here because I honestly believe that you could move that pick. And if I was told you cannot shed any of the salary you currently have,
right?
So you move that pick and whatever that is tax on, then yes, I would have a limit. I want to be able to put $10 million on the table for Pekovic in a deal. I want to be able to offer, and maybe not Pekovic, it could be somebody else if I really like them, but I want to be able to have the opportunity to give somebody who I really like that nice $10 million, eight-figure number that, you know, makes people want to sign the dotted line. So, yeah, I guess, what is that, like a $5 million player, $4 million player? But I also firmly believe that, you know, you could make that trade. You could bring in like a guy making $8 or $9 million if you needed to. And then you could find a taker for Robin Lopez, or you can just decline his option. And then you have the money you need again.
Or you could do a sign and trade. I mean, if you take, right. I did the math the other day. If you take Vasquez's and Lopez's deals, you put them in a sign and trade. So you go after Pekovic, you say, Pek, you know, you could give him something like 4 years, 44. He says, yes, I'll do that. Then you go to Minnesota and say, sign and trade.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. Instead of getting nothing or worrying about having to match this with, you know, with whatever, you get Lopez and Vasquez, two guys on much smaller deals. So, yeah, I still think there's a lot of ways to create flexibility, even if you trade the pick for, again, a guy that just keeps coming up in my mind. And it's really interesting now because one of our executives went to this team and is now the GM. You think about somebody like Wilson Chandler.
All right.
You know, Dell and Tim Connelly are friends. Conley's the new GM in Denver, you know.
Going to do us a solid?
Yeah. Well, see, I don't know. I don't know if that would be a sign. I mean, I don't know if Chandler at $7.5 million is better than, I don't know, Cody Zeller at 2.5. But whatever. Yeah. I mean, something like that could still happen. But yeah, just something to keep in mind where might, you know. I guess let me ask you this. If it was up to you, if this was Ryan Schwan's universe, would you, and all things considered, all this flexibility, all this ability the Pelicans have, would you prefer that free agency come first like it does in the NFL, or do you think that we're set up better that the draft comes first before free agency?
I'd rather have free agency come first.
I agree.
Because then you can honestly pick best player available. And you're not trying to hedge your bets by, yeah, well, this guy does fill a hole, and then I won't have to worry about it in free agency. It's like, no, spend your money, get your draft pick. The draft picks are, the price tags on them are very small. And even if they did something like had it, you know, you had a cap hole during free agency for your pick, I mean, I'd rather you do that.
Yeah.
100%.
I completely agree. Like, in theory, if Andre Iguodala is the Pelicans' number one target this summer, he's their dream guy, the guy they want to get, and Otto Porter is sitting there on the board, you can't pass on Otto Porter because there's a 20% chance you might get Andre Iguodala. Like, you just simply can't. But if it was the other way around, You could get Iguodala, and then maybe you still draft Porter anyway and have Iggy mentor him. You know, Iggy could play some two, Porter could play some stretch four, whatever. Maybe it still works out. But, yeah, I think it makes it so much harder with the draft coming first and having no idea. Obviously, Dell has in plan A, B, C, D, and E, but without any idea of how that's going to go down, I think it makes the draft that much – I think it makes it harder that the draft has to be first.
Yeah. So, question for you. We saw, and we even had a couple of our readers mention this on the blog. They put out their invitation to the draft party, the Pelicans did. There was no mention of Eric Gordon in that press release at all. They talk about Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson, and even the floor general, Grievous Vasquez. No Eric Gordon.
Yeah, they basically said, come to the draft party and watch as we add the sixth pick to our essentially our core of Anthony Davis, Grievous Vasquez, and Ryan Anderson. No mention of the max player who's in his prime, and I'll put this on you. You
okay.
Think so? Imagine all 30 teams send out a similar press release. Can you name any other team that is paying a guy that much money that's that age? So not Amari Stoudemire, but
okay.
You know, paying a guy that much money that is that age that wouldn't be in that same exact press release.
JaVale McGee of Denver, maybe? Maybe?
Even he's not a max guy, and he's never a guy that anybody in Denver said was their best player and an all-star. But...
Yeah, I'm trying to...
I mean, he's by far the highest paid player on the team.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, there are a few players I could see that, but most... No, I mean... Wow.
Yeah.
I thought of it that way.
I couldn't come up with one, so...
Ooh, what about Washington with Emeka Okafor?
I said that age.
Oh, that age. Yeah, okay.
Right.
Yeah, you got me there, too.
This is a cornerstone. I mean, theoretically, he's a 24, 25-year-old cornerstone player. We just gave a max contract to last year. He's been said by both Dell and Monty to be the best player on our team, a future, you know, all-star. There is absolutely nobody else in the league that fits that profile that wouldn't be in the same press release. So am I saying that it's a huge deal? No, but it means something. I talked to a friend of mine who was in PR in NBA for, you know, a long time. I said, I'm not going to even say my two cents. Here's the Pelicans press release. Anything you notice? He emailed me back within 30 seconds. Where's Eric Gordon? And I said to him, so does this mean something? And he's basically telling me, we go through this. He said that in his estimation, there was probably 8 drafts of that exact same email. Yeah. It's not something that they just put together and throw it out there. It is every single word, you know, let alone the players, but every single word and the way it's ordered, you know, by an entire PR staff that he said usually features anywhere between 8 and 14 people, depending on the size of the organization. Is meticulously put together. I'm not saying I know the reason why, but Eric Gordon was purposely left off of that, and you can't possibly tell me it means nothing when not one of the other 29 teams would have done the same with any of their players that fit Eric Gordon's profile.
Yeah, I mean, it means, I can think of two things that it means. Could be either one. One, they know Eric Gordon is a poisonous subject. And I don't think anybody is surprised by that. And they just don't want to mention it. Or two, bye-bye Eric Gordon.
And see, if it was one, and I said the same exact thing to my friend. He said if it was one, he would be trying to get Eric Gordon in front of everybody possible if he was a long-term piece of this team. If Dell views him as a long-term piece, he's going to his PR staff and going, this is bad. Nobody likes him. He's our highest paid player. You know, he needs to be marketable or at least liked or at least not be a guy who we can't bring up in public because people hate him. You need to start getting him in front of as many people as possible, putting out nice things about him. You know, he needs to be included in all of this stuff. He said it would be the exact opposite.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, again, people are, you know, so does this mean I think they have a trade in the works on draft night? No. What I honestly take it as is they know he is not a part of the core moving forward. Whether they move him this year, next year, his contract just, you know, runs out, he opts out and leaves, whatever. They know that there's no way that, you know, when Anthony Davis is in his prime, Eric Gordon is on this team. Because if they truly believe that, they would be working night and day and the PR spin in order to turn it around. So that's fully how I take it. I have no clue when the trade is going to happen. You know, Mark Stein on a recent podcast with Simmons basically said, yeah, he's on the table, but Dell's not going to move him without at least getting an asset in return. You know, when Bill Simmons basically pitched Paul Pierce and then the Pelicans just cut Paul Pierce, you know, Stein said that he knows that Dell has to at least get an asset. So whether that's this year, next year, trade deadline, next summer, whatever, to me, I don't think you could look at that press release and just say, oh, it's nothing. You can't. I can't think of a logical way to say that that means nothing.
Yeah, the only other possible is some publicist is being screamed at in the Pelicans front office right now for leaking it out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the stuff that gets you. Yeah, I mean, I've experienced that in my work now. Is you mess up those things, people get angry. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Is that reassuring or not?
I mean, to me,
I want so bad to think Eric Gordon will become a big scorer again. I really want to.
I just want it to be resolved. I hate clouds looming. I hate it. I want it to be resolved. I want either, you know what, we're going to go all in with Eric Gordon. Maybe he continues to get injured. Maybe his whole four-year contract is just a disaster, but we're going to try, or just move him. I hate the limbo in the middle. I think that, you know, it's tough for the team. But, you know, I think, and I'm sure we'll talk about this guy more in future podcasts when we talk about free agency, it's why I keep coming back to somebody like Andre Iguodala, because I think you bring a guy like that in, a guy that Gordon respects, you know, a guy who's done some Team USA stuff with, a guy who's accomplished things in this league. And I think if you start bringing in people like that, Eric Gordon buys in and, you know, and maybe turns a corner. I don't know how that prevents injuries at all. But, you know, I just want to be resolved. I do not want to be on this podcast with this time with you next year saying what's going on with Eric Gordon. I want to either believe that, you know, there's a buy-in on both sides and he's a long-term piece, or he's gone. I can't deal with the middle for another year.
So, but I got to take this one step further because we're dissecting this press release. So, Grievous Vasquez, member of the core of this team going forward, or obligatory reference because he was high in the most improved voting?
I think if you hit Dell with Truth Serum and you said, give me the odds that the players that I name are going to be on the roster in 3 years, you would say Anthony Davis, he would say 100%. You would say Ryan Anderson, he would say 50%. You would say Jason Smith, he would say 50%. You would say Austin Rivers, he would say 80%. You would say Grievous Vasquez, he would say 20%. You would say Eric Gordon, he would say 0%. So a definite long-term, no. I'm actually more surprised that Vasquez is on there than Eric Gordon, or sorry, than Austin Rivers. But Vasquez is coming off of a second in an MIP award type of year to where he's a name that everybody recognizes and he was productive. So I see why he's included on there. Is Vasquez a long-term piece? Probably not, but in my opinion, a way better chance than Eric Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was funny.
So, yeah, next time we get together, we will unveil our big boards, probably talk about all the latest rumors, because I'm sure there'll be 50 of them. Next thing you know, Steven Adams at this point in 5 days will be talked about as he's going to be the number one pick. So, yeah. A bunch of things will change. We'll talk about it. We'll do a draft.
Ben McLemore is supposed to be falling because he's out of shape.
Yeah, and Ryan Lewis is not coming with him. There'll be a lot of things, but, it's really interesting. I love that Jerry V said that, his bet would be on trading the pick. I think that would make you and I happy, again, depending on who that's for.
Right.
But, yeah, there'll be a lot of things to discuss. I think the next, not even month, the next 3 weeks will be the 3 weeks that, good or bad, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we will look back as the most important 3 weeks transaction-wise in Pelicans history.
So I do want to throw one thing out there at you, because I thought this was funny. I was reading ESPN Insider, and did you see the piece about Chris Paul, Dwight Howard going to one team together, and Kevin Pelton, who has been a guest on the show, gave a number of snowballs chance.
Yeah.
So I proposed a CP3 Dwight Howard combo for the Pelicans, and he gave it 1.5 snowballs chance.
Wow, that's more than I think Dallas, right? Didn't he?
Yeah. Dallas had 1, and L.A. Lakers had 0. Yeah, I was pretty proud of him. So you want to hear it?
Go for it.
All right. So the number one thing that has to happen is Chris Paul says, I'm not staying here. That has to happen, because if he says, I'll stick around, then, we're done. But, so the Hornets.
The Pelicans.
The Pelicans go to L.A., and L.A. was actually talking about reacquiring Eric Gordon at one point. So you put Eric Gordon, Robin Lopez, and Grievous Vasquez on the table for a re-signed Chris Paul. And do that sign and trade after we – basically, if you eliminate everybody from the roster who has a non-guaranteed contract, you can get down low enough where – you can just sign Dwight Howard to like $500,000 less than his max possible. And then you could do the sign and trade for Chris Paul. And you would, the only player that I had us keeping that has a non-guaranteed contract was Jason Smith. So the team ended up being Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, Jason Smith. I also kept Brian Roberts because he's a minimum contract. And Austin Rivers. And, of course, Pelton's response was that there's 1.5 snowballs chance of that happening. And then, of course, our team would be terrible anyways because we didn't have to play Austin Rivers at shooting guard.
Poor
Austin.
Yeah, you could go pick up some minimum pieces at that point. But, I see it as more plausible. I don't see Dallas as plausible. I still even think the Rockets would have to be way too much. I'm sure by the time you publish this podcast, the Doc Rivers trade will have gone through. Or if not tonight, it'll be tomorrow.
You really think it's going to happen?
Oh, yeah. I think Chris Paul's staying. So really it comes down to whether Dwight leaves or not. But, man, this is going to be such a fun summer, and we talk about Eric Gordon. I'm sure we'll talk about this more in the summer, because why not? It's all Eric Gordon all the time in the summer. There's
right.
going to be a lot of teams that miss out on the free agents that they want.
Yes.
If you're asking me when Eric Gordon's trade value is going to be the highest, I can argue it's going to be around July 10th.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Unless, of course, he goes into next year, has a great first half up until the trade line, doesn't get hurt or whatever, but I wouldn't be excited about taking that chance if I could get something at least good on July 10th. I'll let somebody else take that risk. You asked me if Eric Gordon's going to be moved. Maybe not July 10th, because I think up until like July 14th, he could still decline trades and can't be traded to the Suns, whatever. So Mike Stradamos is saying that on July 16th, Eric Gordon will be traded.
Wow. Line in the sand. But I think you're right, because I've mentioned it before. There is so much free agency money available this summer. And people are talking about how there's articles talking about how these teams that are so far over the cap will have lots of opportunities to move some of those players that are going to make them pay huge luxury tax bills to all these teams with lots of space. But, you know, even when you take those into account that some of those players are moving, there is so much money available on the market this summer. And there's probably only like four or five guys who are worth real contracts. So there are going to be teams that are going to be they're going to be Dumarsing the summer.
Yeah.
And I'm just hoping it's not the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas is going to strike out. Atlanta's going to strike out. If Boston blows this thing up and get, you know, they continue it by getting rid of Pierce after they get rid of KG and Doc Rivers, they're going to have, you know, a bunch of money. And I don't think Boston's the kind of franchise that tanks for Wiggins next year. They're going to replace that with somebody. I mean, I could make the argument for 5, 6, 7 teams. You got a new owner in Sacramento with a ton of money. You know what that means. He wants to make a splash. I'm telling you, teams will strike out starting January 7th, 8th, 9th. You'll start hearing some Gordon rumors. That's when it'll go down. So.
Okay. Sounds good. I agree. I'm 100% behind that prediction because I want it to happen.
All right. Well, next podcast, hopefully Ryan doesn't get you drunk this week.
That's right.
If you are worried at all about possible alcohol poisoning, please go to your hospital right now. But hopefully this won't be an issue next podcast.
Hornets.
You're killing them.
Thanks for listening to the show. Party town, ain't nothing but a party.